Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish, where we explore the culinary, distillery, and the winery arts in and around the Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Dravenstadt, host for your gastronomic tour of the region's amazing food and beverage scene. I'm here with Mark Will Weber from Bethlehem, and among his many talents, he is a writer and author of Mint Juleps with Teddy Roosevelt, The Complete History of Presidential Drinking. He's been interviewed on dozens of national media outlets, ranging from Fox News to the Washington Post, and we're happy to have him here again on WDIY. Mark, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
So I know your book was published back in 2014, but certainly it's still relevant. Let's take a step back and talk about what compelled you to write it and to what extent the topic was covered before you started with your writing and research.
Yeah, it was kind of strange how it happened. A friend of mine read some presidential biography, and they mentioned, I forget who it was, but what drinks the person liked. And he goes, I want to know what all those guys drank. And he said, you're a writer. Why don't you do a book on what each president drank? And I actually put him off for like a year because I said, well, what am I going to do with Jimmy Carter and these guys that didn't drink? They're going to be boring. He kept badgering me. And finally, I did the three or four guys that didn't drink much right off the bat to see if they were interesting. And they were, you know, because even though, like, Rutherford B. Hayes didn't drink much, all the people around him drank and made him miserable and that kind of thing. So once I did the three or four that didn't drink a lot and they were interesting, I knew I could do, you know, some great stuff on LBJ and Jefferson and Washington. And the early guys drank a lot.
Now, considering, you know, this isn't policy discussion that's part of National Archives or news or anything like that, how'd you end up compiling the research, especially with some of the earlier presidents?
Well, I did mainly diaries and letters, and it's amazing. I don't think I could have done this book prior to the internet, because I'll give you a good example. When I was doing John Adams, I could call up the Massachusetts Historical website, and I could call up every letter that they have on record between Abigail Adams and John Adams. And then in the search button, I could put in wine or beer or whiskey or rum, and it would kick up, you know, 17 letters where the word rum is mentioned. And I could go through the letters and find, you know, something interesting, like maybe 10 references to rum were nothing, and then seven or so were very interesting, you know, and became fodder for the book. So that was one way I did it, and I went through some standard biographies as well. And it took me maybe the better part of 2 years researching it.
And kind of let's get into, I think, the more maybe salacious parts. Who were some of the biggest boozers when we look back at our presidential history?
Well, LBJ liked to drink a lot. I mean, there was this old British punk song called Drinking and Driving is So Much Fun. I forget the artist, but LBJ liked to drive around his ranch and drink the whole time that he did it. He'd drive around in his Lincoln and he'd drink Pearl beer, or he'd drink Cutty Sark scotch, which is sort of a bargain basement blend scotch out of a plastic cup. And he'd sometimes be going 70, 80 miles an hour around his ranch. Now, his ranch was sort of the size of Rhode Island, so it wasn't, you know, like he was a danger to too many people. But the Secret Service guys would have to follow him around, and they'd have to get out and shield him when the president needed to relieve himself, that kind of thing. So it made for some very interesting stories about LBJ drinking and driving. And as a wrinkle, once in a while, he had this amphibious car, and he wouldn't tell the people in the car that it could float, and he'd go bopping over this ridge into a big lake and go, I got no brakes. And the people would be freaking out, and then it would splash down and float, and he'd laugh. So LBJ, for sure. Jefferson drank a lot of wine. In fact, he basically contributed to his bankruptcy. He had dire financial problems at the end of his life, and he thought nothing of, you know, spending enormous sums back then on the best French and Italian wines that he could import, and it actually contributed to his economic woes. Who else? Well, Andrew Johnson, who, like our most recent president, was impeached, and he showed up for his vice president when he was vice president to Lincoln, he showed up so inebriated that he really could barely talk, and got up on stage and was combative with the audience, and they basically had to give him the vaudeville hook to get him off stage. So there's three pretty hefty drinkers.
And I know we are, as you said, we're recording this in January of 2021, and yeah, we have a new president now, Joe Biden. You know, based on what you know with his background and current situation, kind of where is he on the drinking spectrum, and how does that compare to the previous president, Trump?
Well, you know, if you ever thought that you and I would sit down in an interview and I'd tell you, hey, Michael, I can tell you one thing that Trump and Biden have in common, and you'd be like, what could that possibly be?
Other than age.
And it's that, yeah, both of them don't drink.
Wow.
Yeah, neither of them drink. It didn't stop Trump from trying to make a lot of money from alcohol. He promoted Trump vodka, and he owns
wineries, right?
Yeah, the biggest winery in Virginia, at least acreage-wise, is Trump's. It doesn't produce the most wine, but so he makes money, you know, selling $20 cocktails at Trump Hotel in D.C. Now, Biden doesn't drink. I think there was an uncle or some relative that had alcohol problems, and you know, Trump's brother, who actually attended Lehigh, basically died of overindulging alcohol. So both of them have had, you know, troubling experiences with relatives that probably steered them away from the drink. Trump actually said something funny once. He said, "Can you imagine what the kind of things I'd be saying if I did drink?" But you know what's cool is just very recently there's this microbrewery in Wilmington, I think it's called Wilmington Brew Pub or something, came out with a an IPA in honor of Biden's election, and it's called Rail Number 1 IPA or something in honor of the train that Biden used to always take from Wilmington to D.C. when he was in the Congress.
Well, I'm curious how, whether it's Biden or Trump or some of their predecessors who are non-drinking, how they would navigate social situations as president between alcohol consumption, or actually, especially with, I should say, with foreign leaders, maybe where consumption of alcohol is customary or even expected.
Yeah, that's a very interesting thing, and there's some great stories that revolve around that. As I said, Jimmy Carter wasn't much of a drinker. He would sometimes have a glass of wine with dinner, that kind of thing, or a very weak cocktail, but basically a very, very moderate drinker. And when he was doing summits with the Russians, Brezhnev, who was had a black belt in drinking, he could drink all day, would insist that Carter drink a vodka toast at the end of some of these treaties. And, you know, Carter was horrified. He wasn't going to drink vodka. So he arranged to get a tiny little glass of white wine. So Brezhnev would be slugging down a double shot of Russian vodka, and Carter would have his little white wine, and he'd drink it, and Brezhnev would make fun of him in Russian for you know, not indulging. So it does come up once in a while. And actually, you know, George W. Bush, who was a huge drinker prior to his 40th birthday, he actually surrendered the day after his 40th because he got totally annihilated and threw in the towel. But he used to occasionally, like if he was at a summit with the Germans, he'd have basically a non-alcoholic beer, which is maybe, you know, 1% alcohol or something. So he'd cheat a little bit. But, you know, basically they would skirt around it that way.
And based on what you've seen, is there a difference between the parties, Democratic and Republican, in terms of drinking habits or type of alcohol consumed? Or is this something that's more nonpartisan as we're looking for some unity here?
Yeah, I think it's across the board, you know. You could, especially if you expanded into the Senate and the Congress, I mean, you could say, well, what about Grant? And I could say, well, I'll raise you Ted Kennedy. And you could go on and you know, with the guys that drank pretty heftily. And I think they're well represented on both sides. I will say this. I think the early guys drank quite a bit more than the presidents of the 20th and 21st century. And I wonder if some of that doesn't have to do with, you know, the internet and the instant news cycle now. You know, if you have some sort of alcohol related issue, it's around the world in about 8.5 seconds now, where back in Martin Van Buren's day, it would take weeks, you know, for a story to get out. So I think that probably has something to do with it. And alcohol always played a role in the elections. You know, when Washington ran for the House of Burgesses, so in other words, prior to us even having a country, he supplied all his constituents with free alcohol, and of course they voted for him. So alcohol's always played a role in that. It's a little more sophisticated these days. They have these, you know, $500 plate dinners where they're serving the top wines from around the world. But alcohol still plays a role.
Now, do you find at all whether there was a correlation, either positive or negative, between alcohol consumption by the president and how well the president performed his duties?
Very rarely could you say that it interfered with them performing their duties. There are instances, and I'll give you one with Nixon. Nixon liked to drink, but he wasn't very good at it, and he got inebriated rather quickly. And during the Suez crisis, I believe it was, the British were frantically trying to get a hold of him. It was one of the Mid-East crises. And Nixon's handlers said, "Hey, could we tell him to call back? You know, the president's had a few too many, so tell him to call us tomorrow." You know, so it's that kind of thing happens occasionally, and you can certainly find those things. And of course, that was always the knock against U.S. Grant when he was a general, but they never really found that Grant was necessarily drunk during a battle. But in between, he occasionally got into the bottle.
And Mark, I know you also wrote Muskets and Applejack, which talks about alcohol during the Civil War. What were a couple of the big things that you learned as you put that book together?
Well, a really interesting book to do. I mean, first of all, the alcohol was one of the first lines of defense when a soldier was wounded, you know. So most of the officers carried a little flask of some kind of liquor, so if they got shot leading a charge across a cornfield or something, they'd roll over and reach into their jacket and pull out a little thing of whiskey or brandy and chug it down until somebody got to them and drug them off the field. And then, of course, when they took the bullet off, or worse, had to amputate a limb, there was more alcohol, and occasionally they had morphine and things like that to help, but not often. So alcohol was very big with that. And, of course, the soldiers, the common soldiers, they always wanted women and alcohol, and they couldn't get it much of the former, and usually tried to do their best to get the latter. And they drank in between battles, and, of course, forget the awfulness of what they saw on a daily basis, and the kill the boredom in camp.
Right.
And around the holidays, they were always trying to get eggnog because it made them think of home. So when you go through their diaries, it's really touching. They're like writing home and saying, you know, we managed to get some eggs and a little whiskey, and we're going to make an eggnog just like we'd be having back in Maine tonight or Georgia or whatever. And it's on both sides. They're trying to get, a holiday eggnog to remind them of home.
Well, Mark, I appreciate you joining us here on WDIY and kind of connecting the dots between our history here in this country and alcohol. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Michael.
I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish on WDIY.